Good morning, everybody. 10th of November, 2024. Hey, how's everyone doing in the land of Bitcoin? How's everyone doing? Gonna take you higher, higher. That's right, my friends. Almost 111,000 Canadian, up 4.8K in 24 hours. I'm not obsessive about it or anything like that, but I will say that occasionally before I go to sleep, I like to get the good dreams of high spikes and checketh the priceth of the Bitcoineth. And every now and then it's like, whiplash, whiplash. So thank you to everyone who voted for higher Bitcoin rather than, I don't know, World War III. That's a plus. I'm not saying that World War III wouldn't help the price of Bitcoin, but it's nice to not have the associated mass deaths. So that's a plus. A massive, deep, and a good plus. And isn't it nice that Bitcoin is pumping? I like to pump it. And all of the regular old TradFi markets are closed. They can't do nothing about it. But Bitcoin is always open. Always open. All right. Let's get straight to your questions, comments, issues, challenges, problems, criticisms, whatever is on your mind. Thank you for your donation. ICPZ 2020. I can't see the Z without thinking of the ZX80, which was an original, was it Sinclair 2K computer? Oof. All right. Did you have a look at the TV show The Chosen about the life of Jesus? I did try. It did not take for me. It's like the Rome miniseries. It just did not take for me. The depth and power of the life of Jesus would be very hard. Hey, maybe I should try and write. But the depth and power of the life of Jesus would be almost impossible to write. And it did not work for me. Any thoughts on the Brendan Fraser movie, The Whale? Your live streams over this whole summer have been hitting it out of the park. Your perfect audio for a good gym workout session. Thank you. I appreciate that. I did watch a little bit of The Whale, but it's too depressing. And Brendan Fraser, of course, criticized a Hollywood executive for inappropriate touching, and I assumed that the only way he could get his career back would be to do some kind of humiliation ritual like playing this character. He was a great actor and all of that. But boy, talk about the price of fame. You know, that guy just wrecked his entire body doing all of this. He's so fit and healthy. So, all right. Good morning, Stefan and community. No questions this week. Just a note of thanks for your work. You are a gem to the human race. Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you. Think clearly. All right. Good morning. The sun has finally come out where I live. Taking kids to play in the forest. We'll listen later. Totally. That's a good priority, man. Well done. That's a good priority. Morning, James. Good morning. Bitcoin new high. Oh, yeah. I think I noticed that. It's, it's just interesting because there's so much of investing that has to do with a lot of research and figuring things out. And most of Bitcoin investing is just keep your hand away from the keyboard. You need to have a special computer for trading Bitcoin, selling Bitcoin, and it needs to have about 4,000 volts going through the all metal keyboard. So you try to sell. That's what it needs to be. My net worth has gone up 40% plus this past week, or well, last Wednesday. I'm about to donate on your website. Thank you, Steph. Thank you. I appreciate that. That's very kind. Thank you. If some of my analyses have helped your pockets over the years, you know, sharing the love is not irrational. It could, in fact, be positive. So sharing the love is great. All right. Thank you, Dylan. I appreciate that. Let's go check on the various places where we can get chatty chats. My God, what is it with slow software these days? Holy crap, stick doodlehead. Holy, you just want to take these developers and woodchipper them Fargo style. So when I print out my questions, I have a bunch of questions to answer. When I print out my questions, I have saved a little setting on my printer so that it doesn't print double-sided and, you know, it can print on a larger font so I can read the questions if I'm doing video without having my glasses on. And I swear to God, it's like 4 to 5 seconds to bring up the print options dialog box. On an i7 computer with 32 gigs of RAM. I remember when I bought 32K of RAM to add to 8 to get 40K. I got it from a guy in a parking lot. Hey, man. Hey, kid. You look like you need some memory. So, yeah. And it's just wild to me that that stuff all worked fast. I mean, think of QDOS. Bring up a print dialog. Boom. Right there. Windows 3.1. That was the first big one, right? 32-bit disk access. Let's go. And that stuff would just, you get whiplash from the user interface. Now, with computers a zillion times faster, it's like, hey, can I bring up a print dialog? Box? Anything? Bueller? Anything? No? Oh, there it is. Oh, wait, no, I need to change the tab. Like, I programmed, back in Access 2.0, I programmed a tab interface. I had to do it by hand. It was really, really complicated. I programmed a tab interface. Now there's tabs that are built into Windows, but back in the day they weren't. So you just click and it would flip, click and flip, click and flip. Well, actually, I preloaded all the screen. I preloaded all the subforms and hid and showed them based upon what you clicked on in the tabs. And it was like instantaneous. And this is back when a Pentium was hot shit. Not 486SX. You want 486DX with the math coprocessor for things that you'll never use. Does it make Wing Commander run faster? No, then I don't care. So, why is everything so slow? What is the story with computers? I mean, is it just backward compatibility is causing slow motion sickness? Come on, James T. Kirk. Even he spoke fast from time to time. Windows XP, well, it was the last good Windows. Yeah, it's just so slow. I've upgraded to the new software and the old versions worked better. Spyware ain't going to run itself. Yeah, isn't that wild, eh? You know, like you get this little thing on Outlook. Hey, do you want to try the new Outlook? Sure, I like new things. Oh, ads? Oh, okay. Like, you could mention that. You could mention that. Would you like to try the new version of Outlook where you have to pay to not see ads? No, I really don't, in fact. Oh, I remember Windows 2000, man. Windows 2000 was glorious. It was so fast. It was so fast. And boy, I didn't even want to upgrade to Windows XP. I really didn't, but I had to. I had Zenvision M portable audio player that wasn't recognized under Windows 2000. So I had to upgrade and just move to Linux 10 times faster. Yes. Yes. I'm too old to learn a new OS. Sorry. I just have time now. Time. I'm just aware of time. Time. Passage of time. You know, I have the computer that I use to record my call-in shows is 8 years old. It's creaky, the battery life sucks now, and of course it's going to fail at some point, probably right in the middle of a very important call. And I'm like, okay, I could get a new computer, because 8 years, that's a long time for a computer to be used, right? I could get a new computer, but then I got to spend a couple of hours setting it all up. That used to be fun. Now it's, you know, when you're young, you have an infinite amount of time, so you don't really think about it. But when you're pushing 60, right, you're like, there are limits. I can see. I can count the gumballs left in the machine. It's not just, hey, guess the number of gumballs. It's like, oh, yeah, there are 20 to 25, maybe 30 gumballs. So, yeah, I'll ride it into the grave, that computer. It's a nice little computer, but, yeah. Crazy, man. Crazy. All right. Thank you for your support. Surface Pro 4. No, it's not a 4. This is an old Acer computer from like, yeah, it's early 2017. I bought it. Now it's late 2024. So, yeah, I have a Surface Pro 2, but it's sludgy, man. It just slows down. Just stuff slows down. And of course, in the past, I'd be like, oh, I'll just reinstall Windows. And it's like, nah, I don't have the time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that. So I just let it sludge. And, you know, you bring up the, what is killing the processor? It's a pretty fast processor, an i7, right? So you bring up the task manager sort by CPU, and it's like, okay, why? Why are these interrupts? Why are they doing why, right? You've still got an Acer going from 2012. Excellent. Excellent. Maybe I get another half decade out of it. Yeah, Acer, they make some pretty solid machines. Windows to Linux on my personal computers 5 years ago, never looked back. When I'm forced to use it to work, I suffer greatly. I have a Linux virtual machine that I played around with. Yeah, Acer is hardy, and this is a computer that's dented because I dropped it. It's dented on the corner. So, but I like it because it's got a stand that is a handle, so when I'm walking around, right? I got a 2008 ThinkPad with Linux. Wow. That is immortal beloved. That is immortal beloved. All right. Anyway, let's get to the meat of the matter. So somebody asked me, and you know, let me know if this would be an interesting topic. Hit me with a Y or an N if somebody asked me how to avoid buyer's remorse. How do you avoid regretting your purchasing decisions? Right? Do you have this? Do you feel like you wasted your money? Do you feel like you've bought badly? Do you feel like, what's your relationship with spending and saving and so on? Right? I'm just curious if this is an interesting topic to you, because, yes. Okay. Yes. 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 So I've thought quite a bit about money I'm fascinated by money. I'll tell you straight up, I'm fascinated by money. I love knowing people's finances. I love how do you survive? Because that was always the big mystery to me. How do you survive? Like when people are like, oh, you know, the women, like the suspicious women who are like, yes, I've been traveling for the last year from place to place. I don't have any particular job and I have 18 followers on Instagram. It's like, okay, I get it. You're not traveling, you're riding a carousel from country to country. So, with regards to spending, there's this kind of puritanical thing that happens where you say, okay, here's the essentials and here's the things that are luxuries, right? Here are the essentials and here are the things that are luxuries. Now, I lived in a tent for a year in sometimes minus 40 degree weather. So, anything above that is a luxury. I mean, I really, really lived hard, low, deep, mean, and lean to the ground. Nanook of the North. But without the igloo. So I'd lived in a Jack London novel or an Andy's airplane crash novel. So, and I remember, I just thought about this the other day when I got the question, and there was a guy, a friend of mine, had a house and I needed a place to stay for a month. And he the rooms were all full because he had roommates, but he put me in the attic. And the attic was like dusty and, you know, there was crap and so on. And so to me, hey, you know, I'm not Raskolnikov style living in an attic. I'm not Harry Potter under the stairs. So anything above that, to me, like anything above the bare minimum is luxury. And of course, I'm sure you guys have had this too. When I was a student, I lived very, very lean and poor, right? I lived very, very lean and poor. And you just get the big vat of pasta and sauce. You make it, you freeze it, and you just thaw it, and you just live on, right? Novel. You just live on the sort of bare minimum kind of thing. And there was a student newspaper that would give you 2-for-1 Subway. So I'd go and order a big Subway. And this is back when you could heap on the toppings and they didn't charge you more. So I'd get 2-for-1, 12 inches. And then that would be, you know, 4 dinners because you cut them in half. And right. So you just, you know, live as cheap and lean as possible. So to me, anything above that could be considered a luxury. So I don't sort of divide things in my mind between essentials and luxuries. And, you know, much though I'm not a huge fan of Starbucks as a company for pretty obvious reasons, but they do make a crack addict nitro cold brew that is God's gift to caffeine addicts. He points at himself. So once a month or, you know, if I'm around a Starbucks, I'll pick up a nitro cold brew and they're like, I don't know, $5 or something like that. And so I was like, is it a luxury? Sure, it's a luxury. Can I live without it? Yes, but it doth give me joy. Now, trading money for happiness is a pretty good deal. Trading money for happiness is a pretty good deal. Now, my general philosophy is this. If something makes me happy, it's not too expensive, and it's not like every day, I'll do it. But, I will not spend to avoid unhappiness. I don't know if you've ever had this, if you're sort of feeling down or something like that, and then you're like, well, I could just go buy something and set it up, you know, some technology thing, like I need to replace the light behind me because it stopped working and stuff like that. So I won't spend money to avoid unhappiness, but if it's, for me, it's not super expensive, it's not that often, and it does bring me happiness. And of course, the rarity is what helps bring the happiness, right? If I had a nitro cold brew, God help me, probably have a heart attack. If I had a nitro cold brew every day, it wouldn't bring me that much happiness. But once in a while is a nice treat. So I view that as fine. So if you are spending money on things that generally gain in value, that's a good thing. If you're spending money on things that lose value, then that's fine as long as it gives you some happiness. And you can't, you can't buy love, but you can buy happiness. But the virtue, hopefully, that gets you the love also gets you some success in the money-making world. So you can't buy love, but you can buy happiness. I'm straight up with that. You can't. And there's things that I don't particularly care to spend money on. Like, I was never a car person. Although, I got to tell you, I think self-driving electric cars are the shit. They're just fantastic. But the problem is, for me now, it's like, even if I wanted to upgrade, which I don't really want to do, I think about that and it's like, oh, okay, so then I got to sell the old car and then I got to research the thing, I got to test drive it, find things out, I got to buy it, transfer, learn all the new, blah, blah, blah. It's like, I don't have time for that. I'll drive. Like I drove my first car literally into the ground. It had to be towed to the lot. They gave me $500 as pity money. And my new car, well, it's not even new, it's pretty, pretty old by now, but I'll just drive that into the ground too, because, right, it's just about the time to spend new stuff. So spending money to buy happiness is a good thing. I remember going occasionally on vacations, and if I wasn't seeing anyone and my friends were busy, I'd just go on vacation on my own. I have great memories of that. I have great memories of going on vacation on my own. I remember flying to the Dominican Republic for like 2 weeks after I had a big push at work. And it was glorious. I sat on the beach. I read philosophy. I was going through a big Nietzsche and Jung phase. And then I played beach volleyball for hours a day and went for dinner and chatted with people. And it was just lovely. I was great. Now, I wouldn't remember those 2 weeks if I hadn't spent that money. I wouldn't remember those 2 weeks. I wouldn't have the couple of photos that I have of that trip. So spending money to get good memories, spending money for happiness seems to me a good investment. It seems to me a good investment. And you can't take your money with you, right? And when you get old and decrepit, right, then you want to have memories of things you did that were fun and cool and memorable. You don't want these copy-paste days, which is when you're just on the hamster wheel of productivity and you don't buy particular time slices of beautiful memories. Then it's just like one of those ping pong ball days, you know, like you're living inside a ping pong ball. There's no cloud differentiation. There's no breaks. It's just white ping pong over sky. Whereas, you know, one of the beautiful things you see, breaks of the clouds, sunbeams going. I remember when I was a kid seeing a plane fly over my school and it was going in and out of the clouds, going visible and invisible. I still remember that just as a beautiful thing. So you want breaks in the routine. You want breaks in the routine. And a lot of times for breaks in the routine, you got to spend some coin. And it's worth it. When you get old, you want to look back. Now, when you're old, your memories keep you company, right? When you're old, your memories keep you company. Obviously, you have people in your life too, but you want to look back on a life with as few regrets as possible. And if you just copy-pasted your days rather than buying some break in the clouds, sunlight streaming, Mormon tabernacle choir, beams on the land memories, then you're going to look back and say, well, are you just going to sit there and stare at your bank account when you're too old to spend anything on fun? Are you going to sit there and look at your bank account and say, well, that, you know, having those numbers there is really, really worth having no particular differentiating memories in my life. I sacrificed happiness for bits and burps and beeps on a computer. That is not a wise thing. Now, you can say, yes, but you can leave your money to your kids. Absolutely, for sure. But what do you want to leave for your kids? A bunch of money or an exciting life that they had some adventures in? You know, like there was a time for this show, I traveled like more than half the year. Like I was going to go to speeches. I went, of course, did the Australia thing. I went to Poland, went to Hong Kong, went to the European Union in Brussels, gave speeches, went to Florida to give speeches. And so I was just traveling all the time. And my daughter, we had a blast doing those things. We have very vivid memories of being hunted through the streets in Australia. So, and you know, you think of the poor young people whose lives were completely wrecked and destroyed because of old age querulous paranoia during the COVID era. Those days, I mean, they look back on those years, or sometimes 18 months, or sometimes even 2 years, and they can't remember them at all, right? It's just copy-paste. You look back on your life, the repetition evaporates, and all you have to look back on are the peaks and valleys. And as you look back, the valleys were never as deep as you thought, but the peaks were great, right? Right. Nostalgia is just sadness erased or eroded by time. So, I mean, I even have nostalgia for my teenage years these days, which, you know, was a very difficult time, but it was a very memorable time. It was a very memorable time. So I think it is worth spending money on memories. It is worth spending money on vivid experiences. And to save at the expense of joy is to erase endless amounts of your time through blind repetition, right? I mean, if somebody says to me, oh, what were you doing at this particular time in 2018? It's like, oh, yes, I was touring Australia. Very vivid time, very powerful, very wild, great crowds, great danger, bomb threats, death threats, you name it. And getting ripped off by the organizers, like just a whole bunch of things, right? So, very vivid. Very, very vivid stuff. So have that. Have that so you look back upon your life and it's not just a sort of endless copy-paste days of, you know, work, some video games. I mean, it's funny because I even remember vivid things in video games. There used to be this server called GWAR's server that ran Unreal Tournament. And I still remember very vivid, we'd play Facing Worlds. I remember, you know, just winning in a battle that was going on forever, getting to the flag with like 3 hit points left. And like, you know, there's vivid stuff with regards to that too. There's nothing bad about that, but just have something vivid, and vivid stuff can cost money. It generally does. So I think spending money to buy dopamine is a good deal in life, because when you have enough dopamine, you're not existentially concerned about meaning, right? When you're happy, right? Say, what's the meaning of life? Well, be happy so that you don't worry about meaning. I mean, nobody has an absolutely fantastic day where everything goes right and then says, well, what's the meaning of all this? Meaning is the smoke that comes out and stings your eyes when you are cratered from a lack of happiness, a lack of dopamine, right? And so to avoid the question of the meaning of life, have vivid, positive, productive experiences, and you won't have to worry about meaning. It won't even cross your mind. Nobody has a great orgasm and right in the middle of the orgasm, like, yes, but what's the meaning of all this? Not that there's a bad orgasm, but you know what I mean. So hopefully that helps. All right, so somebody asks, is woke a violation of UPB? And if it is, can you make an argument against woke using UPB? Or is it evolutionary that most people find it repulsive? So woke is just part of the late cycle of a combination of freedom and coercion. So freedom allows people to generate wealth. The capacity to generate wealth relies upon inequality in capital, right? You should give your money to Elon Musk rather than somebody who's bad at business, because Elon Musk will multiply that capital with his sheer intergalactic competence. So you should give your money to Elon Musk. But of course, since Elon Musk is a magic capital creator or increaser, then lots of people want to give money to Elon Musk, which means that Elon Musk is very wealthy. And so a certain amount of freedom allows a meritocracy, right? Freedom is meritocracy. So you end up with a lot of, a small number of very wealthy people as a result of freedom. That's right. You can have equality or you can have freedom. You can't have both. So then what happens is there's an evolutionary strategy that arises in the free market when people become wealthy. And that is whining, bitching, complaining, nagging, and playing the victim, right? It's not fair. It's a younger sibling strategy, right? And it's fine when you're a younger sibling. If the older sibling gets more, you have to raise a fuss and kick and fuss and complain and so on, right? Because you have to make sure you get your share, because the older kids will get more because they're bigger and stronger. So that's totally fine as a kid, right? But what happens is when wealth gets concentrated, then it becomes highly profitable in conjunction with the state to complain about inequality. Because then the complaints about inequality are one thing, but the complaints about inequality plus the state, since the number of poor people outnumber the number of rich people, like tenants outnumber landlords, like by definition, right? So the mob, through its numbers, either implicitly through the state or explicitly through like pitchforks and torches and go and steal and kill from the rich guy, they threaten, right? The minority of productive people are threatened by the majority of resentful people. So freedom breeds meritocracy, breeds a concentration of wealth in the hands of the few amazingly productive people. And then the strategy is to complain about inequality so that the rich people will bribe you not to attack them. Right? So whenever a politician says, well, we want the rich have to pay their fair share, right? That provokes ancestral memories of rich people being killed for their money. Okay, here you go. Here you go, angry mob. Here's some money. Here's some money. Just don't kill me. Right? And this is why capitalism breeds socialism and communism, with the state as the adjunct, right? So that's the cycle. So then what happens is, if you bribe people to be unsuccessful and not attack you, then you just pay more people to be unsuccessful and threaten to attack you, which is why on the left, it's all about, oh, you know, the wealthy have gotten wealthier and they need to pay their fair share. It's an absolute statement of, give us your shit or we'll run you out of town or kill you. Right. It's if you have a successful store, organized crime might show up and say, you know, it's a nice store here. It'd be a shame if something happened to it, but we can protect you from something happening to it if you just pay us $5,000 a month or whatever it is, right? So the moment you get successful people, a resource allocation or reallocation strategy emerges, which is to complain about inequality with the implicit threat of bribe us, pay us off, or we'll chase you out of town or kill you. And the sophists always arise to complain, and they say, look, there's this giant office tower, this vertical ice cube tray of pomp, circumstance, and capitalist greed. And look, there's somebody who's living in a cardboard box at the bottom of the giant glass tower of capitalist greed, and it's so unfair, and it's so wrong, and it's just, you know, just take a little bit from these guys, give it to this guy, right? Yeah, paying your fair share is code for a foundational threat against the productive, right? Because the reality is, the rich pay most of the tax. Wealthy people pay most of the taxes. And it's horrendous. It's horrendous the way it goes, right? So woke is demanding equality of outcome rather than equality of opportunity. And woke emerges, right? This is why when you have a state as the center of your society, economic freedom leads to tyranny. Now, in the past, the way they solved this, and I'm not talking morally, I'm just talking practically, is that the rich were the aristocracy and they could just kill you in general, right? So that's how they defended their wealth, was just with violence. But when you have capitalists, it's not the same kind of thing, right? So, of course, the capitalists, the expensive, the high-end capitalists will work with the state to try and protect their interests and so on. But in general, the wealthier you get, the more resentment is targeted against you, right? And this is, of course, the result of foundational economic illiteracy, right? That if you take away resources from the most productive people, your economy will collapse. Because most people do not increase capital in any substantial way. Most people do not have the weird, freaky brilliance to increase capital. They don't start businesses that are very successful, right? They don't invest in things that have a high rate of return because of massive productivity. The number of very, very productive people in society is very, very low. They have magic abilities, like the people with the green thumb. Some farmers can get 10 times the productivity out of their fields. They're obsessed about it. They work at it. They're relentlessly curious. They experiment like crazy. So there are some people with this green thumb, they can just produce amazing stuff. And because they can produce amazing stuff, they can bid more for the land, and so they end up with more land. And then what happens is the people who used to work the land, who were just not skilled or not curious or not brilliant or not innovative, or and it's no fault, right? It's just scattered among the population as a whole. So they end up, we used to own the land, man, now we just work the land. You know, I used to have these 20 acres, now I just work for Daddy Warbucks up there on the hill. And then people come along and say, hey, man, he stole your land. It wasn't fair. It wasn't right. They just provoke this resentment. Because around a successful capitalist, people go from capitalists to workers, especially in the realm of farming, right? So let's say you and I are in competition for land. You're 10 times more productive than I am with the land. So you can at least offer 5 times more or twice more. You can certainly outbid me, right? You can outbid me. If I can only get $100,000 worth of crops out of the land, but you can get $1 million, then you could outbid me. And so, and you can also come to me and you can say to me, sell me your land, right? Sell me your land. I'll give you, you know, 3 times what it's worth or 5 times what it's worth. And they can make that money back very quickly. So when you're around one of these magic producing people, then you go from owner to renter, you go from capitalist to worker, you go from entrepreneur to wage earner. And generally, you'll make more, right? So what happens, though, is that you resent. It appears to be magic. It appears to be magic. And look, we've all seen this. I mean, you watch John Bonham playing his double guitar at the height of his powers in the 70s. It's weird. It's freaky. I don't understand it. I remember learning how to play guitar. It's like these short, stubby fingers, and it hurts, man. It's uncomfortable. So you see people playing this, and to me, it's incomprehensible. Like, how do you know what to play? Especially jazz musicians. It's a kind of magic. It's a weird kind of magic, right? I don't understand it. But, you know, there's people who look at what I do and they don't understand it. It's incomprehensible to them, whereas it's kind of natural to me. So when you're around these kinds of people, like, you know, Freddie Mercury sitting in a bath in Munich and the tune to Crazy Little Thing Called Love just kind of pops into his head and he records it. I mean, I tried writing a couple of songs when I was a teenager too. And it's not easy, man. It's not easy. And it wasn't particularly fun for me, and I didn't particularly enjoy it, so on, right? So there's just people, it seems magic. It seems like bizarre. Now, of course, religious people it's a gift from God, right? It's a God-given gift. You hear this about singers, right? What was it? Sweeney Christmas or Christmas Sweeney or something? Like, I was watching the other night this woman who was on a British talent show with like an absolutely stunningly ethereal, angelic, you would say God-given voice and presence and talent and just amazing. Amazing. So yeah, if somebody can look this up and get me her actual name, I don't want to disrespect the woman. And she was in her, I think she was in her mid-late 20s and she'd sung on cruise ships and done this and that, but had never had her break. And she was just absolutely glorious. She took a song that's kind of bad, in my view, tomorrow, tomorrow, I love you, tomorrow, you'll always say. And she just brought that thing to life and sent 80,000 volts through it and just made it absolutely electric and powerful. Songs you've heard a million times before with an amazing singer, it's like you're hearing again for the first time. And it really was amazing. Let me just get her name. What was her name? Come on, you can search. Sydney Christmas. S-Y-D-N-I-E, Christmas. Sydney Christmas. She won the 17th series of Britain's Got Talent in 2024. And she was stunning. Absolutely stunning. Somebody saying this is happening right now with the popular streamer Kai Cenat. He does crazy streams and raises the bar. Many streamers are mad and saying that he's making being a streamer much harder. Was he the one? Somebody said, hey, streaming is tough. Streaming is hard. Right? And it's funny because I won't sort of particularly talk to that, but I will say that if a successful streamer, let me just see here. If a successful streamer says that it's hard to do, that's absolutely valid, right? Yeah, I can't find it, but somebody was, and of course that person just got mocked, right? Oh man, you just sit down and you yap into a microphone. I mean, that's easy. And it's like, well, I remember going to see Chris de Burg. I've seen him like, I don't know, three times or whatever. Great, great live performer. And Chris de Burg was like, oh, this is just so easy. You just stand and yell in the microphone. And I remember Roger Waters, when he was talking about touring, doing The Wall, he's like, this is easy. You know, like, hey, raising a toddler, that's hard. This is just easy. This is just like second nature, right? So people are mad. So being a successful streamer is hard. Being a successful streamer is hard. And I don't mean that it's hard for the people who do it, but it's a difficult and challenging skill set. And the people who are like, oh, talk to the guys who were like digging gold out of the ground, or talk to this, or talk to that. And it's like, but hard doesn't mean physically difficult. Yes, you're just sitting there and clicking and right. But it's hard to engage with the audience. You've got to multitask. You've got to be original. You've got to make jokes. You've got to self-censor because you don't want to say something that's going to get you in too much trouble. There's a whole lot of processing that's going on that is not easy, because a lot of people would much rather stream than work at a 9-to-5, right? So if it's a desirable job and very few people can succeed at it, then by definition, it's not easy, right? If it's a desirable job and very few people succeed at it, then by definition, it's not easy. Now, it may be easy for the people to whom it comes naturally, but it's not an easy job. Otherwise, everyone would do it, right? Otherwise, everyone would do it. Wow. Okay. Sorry. A lot of chats here. A lot of chats here, over. All right. Steph, not sure if I can ask a Bitcoin question in the stream, so please ignore if off topic, but I buy Bitcoin, but I would like to invest my 401k also so I can use my company match, but they disallow that. Obviously. Obviously, where does the next question come up? I work Roth RIAs, can't buy Bitcoin, so I'm trying to explore investments that are impacted by its value. That's investment advice, which I not only can't do, but wouldn't do even if I could, because you need to make your own decisions about that, right? All right. I buy tactical stuff I don't really need. It's a disease. Luckily, I have a wedding to plan and a budget to keep and a fiancé with a death stare. Do not spend too much on your wedding, man. Do not spend too much on your wedding. Do not, because that is a shit test. Do not spend too much on your... Oh, honey, I'll give you anything you want. It's your dream day. Halala. Oh, my God. No. Do not do that. For a lot of women, it's a power play. And they're begging you to say no. They're begging you to say no. All right. The movie Watchmen has a good quote about the past getting brighter when the mother looks back fondly on a traumatic experience that resulted in the birth of her daughter. Yeah. All right. So a lot of topics about... Oh, are these repeating? It looks like they're repeating. Excellent. Good job. Is it moral to invest in companies that profit from government contracts? I don't... In particular, I don't care about purity stuff. I mean, I don't think it's particularly wise to invest in, you know... I don't think it's wise in particular or moral to invest in companies that are straight up like war profiteers. That's not particularly great for me. So, yeah, it is hard to be a streamer. You know, it's hard to be, it's rare to be a good singer, right? Really, really good singers are rare. Because it's not just the voice. You usually have to have the look. You've got to have the passion, the commitment, the theatrical style. You've got to have the emotional connection. You've got to be able to tell a story through the song. Like a really good singer is not common. And so, but if you say, oh, come on, man, you just sing for like an hour and a half, three times a week. That's easy. It's like, no, it's not. I mean, there was an old Dr. Phil. I'm actually off Dr. Phil these days as a whole, but, I remember there was an old Dr. Phil thing where his grandmother was like, well, you only work an hour a day. What do you do with the rest of your time? Show's on only an hour a day. So less productive, less intelligent people view the productivity of the productive geniuses as it's magic, it's unfair. And I get that it's kind of unfair. I get it is kind of unfair. Right? How much of the value that you have in life did you specifically earn through your own free will and choices? Right? I have a pleasant speaking voice. I did not earn that. Now, I've taken voice training. I went to theater school. I've taken some singing training, which is good for general voice control. I can maintain the instrument and so on. I have a little bit of an accent. I'm a decent looking guy. And so on, right? So I didn't earn these things. I mean, you can say, well, you know, I maintain my weight and exercise and that helps a little bit, whatever, right? But my IQ is, you know, 80%+ genetic, right? Like my intelligence is born with, didn't earn, right? So when you look at all of the things that you have that bring value to the world and you say, what are the things that I am responsible to, that I'm directly, I'm not responsible for my intelligence. Now, I am responsible for some of the integrity and the focus in which I apply my intelligence to try and create additional virtues. So there are definitely things that you can be proud of, but it's like height. Height is 100% genetic, you know, barring starvation or whatever, right? But height is like 100% genetic. So if you're tall, to take pride in height, you know, like everybody knows the guys with great hair, and I guess women too, but for guys, because the alternative is bald, guys with great hair are often kind of snobby and arrogant. And they literally believe that they have some sort of significant value because some ape-like protein strands grow out of their forehead. It's really pathetic. But women do this with looks as well. She's got a great figure and she thinks that me, but she didn't invent lust. She didn't invent hormones. She didn't invent male desire. She didn't invent her figure. Now, again, she works to maintain it, and that's a value, I suppose. But one of the reasons she works to maintain it is it's a great figure to begin with, right? So the sort of bare-forked animal, something I really remember from studying at Glendon University. I still remember the name of the professor, but studying King Lear. You know, King Lear goes from pomp and vanity and arrogance and dictatorial natures out into nature's elements and the wind. And he's the bare-forked animal. What is man but this bare-forked animal? Who are you outside of the accidental, outside of the genetic, outside of the inherited, outside of the unchosen? I didn't choose my race. I didn't choose my sex. I didn't choose my height. I didn't choose my eye color. I didn't choose my accent. I didn't choose my voice. I didn't choose my intelligence, right? Who am I that is not inherited, accidental, or unchosen? It's a big-ass question, man. You answer that question, that's the beginning of real virtue. You answer that question, that's the beginning of real virtue. Somebody says, why do listeners claim to have difficulty financially supporting you through subscriptions or donations? If they listen to you, they'd have gotten Bitcoin and easily afford to support you. Some people are new listeners, right? So the greats make something difficult look easy, for sure. Yes, and that's the other thing too, is that when you're really, really great at something, then you make it look easy, and then other people want to replicate it. They can't. They get frustrated, right? My brother is low class and thinks that real men do hard labor and didn't think anything intellectual was serious. Always thought what I did was too simple and I don't think I deserve to make money. My parents sided with him and both sabotaged me throughout my life. I didn't realize they were sabotaging me until it was brought up to me by someone who cared enough about me. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It is a low IQ thing to think that the factory guy who makes the good, right? This is back to the song Rehumanize Yourself by The Police. I work all day at the factory, making a machine that's not for me. It must be a reason that I can't see, right? Right. Well, it is the organization and pointing of the physical labor, a genuine market need and profitable enterprise, that is the brilliance, right? I mean, you can go carry around a bunch of plates in the forest and make no money at all, but if you build a restaurant, you have somebody builds a restaurant around and puts the right menu with the right approach, the right decor, the right like investment, the right advertising, the right, you name it, right? Then you can make money carrying plates of food around, right? So do you think that streamers say it's very easy compared to a 9-to-5? Are they virtue signaling to win over the audience? No. Everybody who's successful knows about the resentment of the less successful. Right? Everybody who's successful knows about the resentment of the less successful. I mean, that's really a lot to do with my deplatforming, was the resentment of the less successful. Right? This goes back to, I used to go to this camp, Camp Bolton, sometimes for a month or 6 weeks over the course of the summer. It was very, very cheap back then. I got subsidies because my family was so broke. And there were these dances. There were a lot of disappointments in that, although the camp was fun as hell. But there were these dances where, this is one of the first times at the age of sort of 13 or 14 or wherever I would go, that, and I was actually taken back there for a photo shoot because I was considered a somewhat attractive young man. But anyway, so at the age of 13 or 14 is when I first asked girls to dance, right? And I got girls to dance with me. And my friends who were up there, who were less attractive, would, one of them came by and elbowed me in the thigh really hard, right? And this was considered funny, you know, and I basically half folded over, right? Because it was really painful. It's tough to stand on a really bruised thigh. So I understand that, right? So he needed to make me look bad because he couldn't compete. So there's that resentment, right? Like I had a family member I was much more attractive to when I was growing up. He had really bad acne. And he was sabotaging me with girls all the time. Can't compete, sabotage, right? So you have to appease the mob in order to continue to be successful. So that's not good. I mean, it's inevitable, right? Because that is nonsense. Yeah, the communist propaganda in the USA. The factory workers make all the products and the people in the offices are just freeloading. They're just freeloading. Yeah, for sure. I mean, how do you be the most attractive without getting the rage, resentment of the less competent mob? Yes, the smugness when you ask some 40s guys dating 20-year-old women if he kept his hair. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. And he, you know, I'm fine with that, but let's not pretend you earned it. Let's not pretend that you got to keep your hair because of some God-given virtues or something. It's just, you know, 10% of guys keep their hair into their old age. And all four of them happen to be in the Beatles. So, although John Deacon of Queen went bald. But you could see that poofy hair vanishing. All right. Is a coffee date or lunch a good idea for a first date, or maybe invite a woman to an upcoming gala or dinner? I think coffee date is a bit cheap, and it's not a very romantic environment. I would do a lunch as a whole. Kids would do that in school, kick you in the leg to give you a Charlie horse happen whenever you got a girl's attention. Yeah, for sure. Sabotage is essential in the sexual marketplace, right? So they did this study where they asked women to suggest to other women how short they should cut their hair. And if without fail, the women suggested to the most attractive women that they cut their hair the shortest. Without fail. The more attractive she was, the more women said, oh, you should cut your hair short. It's a perfect bob for you. And this is why a lot of times, you know, there's a lot of shit I don't understand about women, but this gives me a tip. So one of the things I now understand about women is, have you ever talked to a woman who's gone to a hairdresser and she comes out and she's in tears because her hair is now too short? Right? Have you ever heard that happen? I can't believe she cut it so short and in tears and it's going to take months to grow back and blah, blah, blah. Well, that's because I think a lot of female hairdressers sabotage their clients because the clients are more attractive than they are. And it's just an instinct. Like, the unattractive women will now suggest to women that they cut their hair short, that they dye it blue, that they get nose rings and shit that men hate. I'm not going fishing. I don't need you to look like a tackle box. It's not a thing. So, yeah, this intersexual competition. And this is another thing, too. So, a super productive guy is genetically going to have more kids, right? And so when you take his resources from him and give it to you through resentment and explicit or implicit threats of not so peaceful income redistribution, then you're taking resources from the more productive person, giving it to the less productive person, which means that you are taking reproductive capacity from the more productive person, taking that away and giving it to the less productive person. So you've got all these unattractive women going on sex strikes over Trump, which is like me going on a strike against getting a mohawk as a hairdo. Yeah. Pretty tragic. All right. Bum, 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 baby, take off your coat real slow. All right, is it okay to modify yourself, like surgeries or implants, to get an edge on people? I would never in a million, billion, zillion years, personally, would never ever date a woman who did plastic surgery or breast implants or butt lifts or anything like that. That is just so much of a red flag. I can't see the person beyond the wraparound Chinese Communist parade. So I would not in a million years. Get anything like that. I mean, I think fake boobs are just repulsive. I think they just look weird and gross. And I couldn't. I've never touched any of that, and I just think it would be completely bizarre. Like, a basketball under a blanket is not my definition of sexy. And, I mean, obviously, I don't know, a nose job, if you've got some fierce schnocker, you know, like, hey, you, your nose was on time, but you were 5 minutes late. Okay, whatever, right? But if you start wearing a toupee, I won't judge. I am not going to start wearing a toupee. Oh my gosh, can you imagine? Can you imagine? That'd be terrible. So I wouldn't date anyone who had any significant body modifications. I never dated a woman with a tattoo. I've never dated a woman with any piercings other than her ears. I've never dated a woman who wears a lot of makeup. I've never dated anyone like that. I just think that's weird. And it is a sign of deep neurosis and insecurity, right? If it's a good job, it looks completely natural. I don't know. I mean, I don't. Because it's like, because what you're doing is you're messing with the whole body as a whole, right? So a slim woman with big boobs is virtually impossible, right? A slender woman with big boobs is virtually impossible. It can happen, right? But in general, if you add size to the boobs and it doesn't change the body as a whole, then it just looks off. Everything just looks off because we have an instinctive sense of what fits together from a body standpoint, right? So do that for April Fools. I don't think it would fool too many people. Yes, Kamala Harris supporters are now doing something called a 4B strategy after Trump won, which includes shaving their hair and looking as unattractive as possible as some sort of spite. Yeah. Yeah. No, I get that for sure. I get that. And it's really, really sad. Thank you, Jeremy. It's really sad that all they have to offer the world is celibacy. So Christian conservatives are celebrating the Trump win by having a lot of kids, and leftist women are going on a sex strike. Nature is healing. Nature is healing. And it's going to be very hard for them to maintain this because women, and men too, okay, right, but women like male attention. Because the women who didn't care about male attention didn't do what was necessary to please men, and their genes did not reproduce, right? So women like male attention, and a lot of the ways they get, like, you can get male attention by being a quality person and a great conversationalist and virtuous and funny and curious and all of that, right? But a lot of these women get male attention through offering sex, and therefore they think that the greatest harm they can do to men is to withhold sex. Okay, so then if they withhold sex and they make themselves ugly, they are setting themselves up for a massive depression, because are they going to be the kind of women who can get quality men to pay attention to them? No. No. So they're going to find that they are going to, they're courting massive depression by a withdrawal of attention. And so what they're trying to do is they're trying to get a female solidarity instead of male romantic attention, right? And this is a very dark road for women, to try and get the approval of dysfunctional women rather than romantic interest from functional men. It's a grave coven-like disaster, right? All right, sorry. A couple other questions here. Why is a breast implant fundamentally different from a dental implant? What? Sorry, I'm not quite understanding this. Why is a breast implant fundamentally different from a dental implant? Okay, you can answer this for yourself, can't you? A breast implant is putting something in that wasn't there in the first place. A dental implant is replacing something that got removed for medical reasons. Not having a breast implant is not bad for your health. Sometimes having a breast implant is bad for your health. Having a tooth replaced that fell out or was pulled out for some medical reason prevents the other teeth from drifting and additional problems and allows you to chew. So you're replacing something that was already functioning with something that's exactly the same, as opposed to, and that you need for your health and all of that. So I don't understand why. Do braces count? Well, no, braces are important because if you have really crooked teeth, then it can be hard to clean and can cause dental problems. So, yeah, with bad teeth, you can't eat. Yeah. Women love male attention. Of course. I mean, and they should. And we care, men care whether they're attractive to women, and women care whether they're attractive to men. Of course. Feeling that that's a kind of slavery is kind of incomprehensible to me. It really is. I'm so enslaved by all the biology. Like, it's pillaging from the past. It's one thing I really hate is this pillaging from the past shit. It's UPB in a nutshell, right? Oh, sorry, the final question I got to with regards to the woke stuff. Hey, you can have as much resentment as you want. You can even go around talk, it's free speech to go around and complaining that the rich guys have stolen everything from the poor guys. It's false and demonic, but it's not evil to be wrong. But when woke leads to the feeling, see, what woke wants to do is say the rich guys stole from you to justify stealing, quote, back, right? That's all. That's all. That's all it's about. It's justifying theft and aggression by pretending it's self-defense or the recovery of property that was unjustly taken. So it is a justification for the initiation of the use of force, and therefore it is wrong. It is wrong. So you want a bell curve of attractiveness, right? You don't want somebody who's totally slovenly. You know, like the guy with no neck and a neck beard who, you know, lives in his sweatpants and doesn't brush his teeth much or, right? So, and doesn't wash his hair much and, right? So you don't want someone who's slovenly. You want someone in the middle, right? The Aristotelian mean. You also don't want somebody, like I remember working with this girl up north. We had to go into town to pick up some groceries and she needed an hour to put her face on. I'm like, we're just going to a little town, to a one-horse town, to a tiny grocery store to get some groceries. You don't need to spend, like, so you don't want that. You want somebody in the middle, right? Somebody in the middle, somebody who cares about their appearance enough to be presentable and attractive, but not somebody who can't leave the house without 14 pounds of makeup on, right? Because that's both of them. One is depressed and the other is hysterical, right? Steph, what do you think of the women who require that their husbands and sons sit down on the toilet while peeing? To me, it makes rational sense, but it feels like the men are getting castrated. Is that a thing? I think that the women say, can you put the toilet seat down? But I don't, they require the husbands sit down peeing. Oh, so they don't, there's no splash damage? Yeah, I've never had that in a relationship. So I can't really speak to that, but I would just laugh at that, right? I would just laugh at that. I'm just like, well, I mean, what are you talking about? I'll pee the way that I want to pee. Thank you very much. And of course, I will work to not make a mess and blah, blah, blah. For sure, I get all of that. But yeah, I find that, I just think that's ridiculous. I just, it would be funny. To me, that would be just something that would be funny and kind of ridiculous. All right. Teeth are not a sexual display. Yeah, they are. Teeth are a sexual display. For sure. Yeah, teeth are absolutely a sexual display. Good, healthy teeth and even teeth and white teeth. And, you know, it shows self-care, it shows health, and so on. So, yeah, it absolutely is a sexual display. I could never understand why rather heavy women would spend hours every night doing makeup. I always thought it would make more difference to spend the time in the gym. Yeah, I remember having a significant disagreement with a friend of mine many years ago about a fat woman who'd obviously labored over her makeup. And I'm like, well, why wouldn't you just spend that time and exercise? Like, why wouldn't you just do that? Right. Let's take all the people who were completely terrified of COVID and who hadn't gone to the gym or exercised in 10 years. And I'm like, I can't take your concerns over your health seriously. Like, I just can't. I can't take paranoia about health seriously if a person is unhealthy, right? Do you exercise? Do you get your blood work done? Do you get your checkups, right? Do you check in on these things? Are you a healthy weight? Do you eat well, right? So the people who said that other people were endangering them by not wearing masks when they themselves were a good 75 pounds overweight, it's like, nah. If you were that worried about your health as a whole, then you wouldn't be in that situation, right? So. Now, it was just, I mean, as you know, it was just a bullying thing, right? It was just a bullying thing. All right, let me get to your last questions, comments, issues, challenges, problems, whatever is on your mind. Thank you for your support. If you would like to tip, freedomain.com/donate is the best way to do it. And don't forget to go to freedomain.com/books and listen to the present. It's so good. It's so good. And I think it's unique in that I think it's one of the few novels in the world that talks about men's rights in a sympathetic way. And let's just wait for the Ozempic lawsuits to start. It's my particular opinion. Not medical advice, just my particular opinion. All right. So let's see here. Saw your interview on BitChute. Have you done other interviews recently? I don't remember that one on your page. Well, you're going to have to narrow that down just a smidge, my friend. But I did 5 hours with Keith Knight. I did a review of my novel, The Present, with Duke Pester. But no, I haven't really done interviews lately. I mean, I suppose that these are kind of interviews and that you guys are asking me questions and I'm answering them, so. And don't forget fdrurl.com/TikTok. fdrurl.com/TikTok would be, it's a good thing to follow. It's a good thing to follow. All right, let me just see if I had anything interesting with regards to saved bookmarks. Oh, and it's so funny, of course, to me, and entirely predictable. Steph, do you think you'll see another huge invention like the internet in your lifetime? I mean, it's happening right now with AI, right? It's happening right now with AI. So, I, of course, was... Steph, have you ever lost a significant amount of writing when you wrote a book through file corruption or deletions, etc.? Yeah. And a few bits of crypto. And a few bits of crypto. But what are you going to do, right? So... I was rabidly attacked for saying to people that you should not, you don't have to be in abusive relationships even with parents, right? The immediate family, if the relationship was continually abusive. Oh, do more if you're scrolling X and commenting on the timeline. Okay, thank you. I will absolutely do that. That's fun. So I will absolutely do that. And thank you for the reminder, right? So remember back in 2008. Or something. My first sort of in the media was, you know, that I'm just a terrible evil guy for saying to people that you don't have to spend time with abusive people, even if they are parents, right? Never told anyone to leave their family. And it apparently was just absolutely appalling. And now all over the left is cutting people off for voting, right? Cutting people off for voting Trump, right? And that's crazy. Cutting men off from sexual activity, cutting boyfriends off, ending relationships, breaking up with people, not seeing your grandparents, not seeing your parents, not seeing your kids, cutting people off for political differences. Apparently now that's fine. That's totally fine. When I talked about not being in abusive relationships, that was just evil and culty. But now if somebody votes different, boy, they're just evil. And I don't know. It's very sad. So there are only 2 million Bitcoin left on all crypto exchanges worth $150 billion. What happens if a country tries to front run Donald Trump and buy $500 billion worth of Bitcoin? There are only 2 million Bitcoin left on all crypto exchanges. Or it's less than 10% of the total, right? Isn't that wild that Kamala Harris raised $1 billion and left a debt of $20 million? She paid $1 million for Oprah's endorsement. I don't know how that's specifically in line with the absolute legality of the situation, but I'm no lawyer. Plus $100,000 for a set on the Call Her Daddy podcast so she didn't have to travel. Oh my gosh. It's wild. Oh, that's wild. This is interesting as well. And I did a podcast many, many, many years ago called The Joy of Anger. You can get that at fdrpodcasts.com. Somebody says, nobody talks about the angry stage of healing, the rage you feel when you realize how much and for how long you were taken advantage of, the absolute disgust you feel towards those who misled you. It comes in waves. Sometimes you feel healed and suddenly it hits you. Yeah. So anger is your body cranking up its defense against exploitation and evildoers. So, Yeah, Kamala Harris spent six figures just building the set for her appearance on Call Her Daddy. How did she plow through $1 billion? Ah, well. You know, she's a big spending liberal, right? That is wild. Donald Trump planned to destroy and dismantle the censorship cartel. I got to tell you, that's pretty freaking tempting. I'm going to put it here so you can look at it after the show. But you got to watch this, man. You got to watch this. If he's able to achieve this, man, I'm alive. Man alive, that would be something. A digital bill of rights. No, you can't get deplatformed without due process. And like just absolutely incredible stuff. Maybe even reform of Section 230, which is a mixed bag. But nonetheless, holy crap. That is something else. Yeah, I don't know how you can pay for endorsements. Again, I'm no lawyer, but it doesn't seem quite right as a whole. But I'm far from an expert in these things. So. Ba-dum-bum, ba-dum. Remember I was talking about body memory and I was talking about your gut sense and so on? So there's an interesting article that came out on nature.com. Which says, we think that all memory is stored in the brain, but our study published today in Nature shows that all cells, even kidney cells, can count, detect patterns, store memories, and do so similarly to brain cells, right? So the body remembers, the body memory, your gut sense, and all of that. That seems to be a thing, I mean, according to sort of the latest science. Patriot Jay says, not once have I seen a Republican brag about how they're cutting off their Democratic friends and family. Y'all think that's a virtue? Y'all think that's a virtue? I mean, that they take their morals and values seriously, but you don't. I don't know how that's a win. I don't know how people, right? BlackRock's Bitcoin ETF is officially bigger than its gold ETF, 33.2 billion assets in just 10 months. Men scored higher than women on emotional stability across countries, even more so in highly individualistic societies. Yeah. Trump is proposing term limits for Congress. I don't know. Wouldn't that just mean that they pillage faster? I like this woman. Patriarchy Hannah. She's pretty funny. She says, I might make myself a vegetable platter and watch brainless TV while I fold laundry. My husband is outside in a storm, fixing a fence, securing stuff, and pumping the drainage ditch because it's clogged. Is this oppression? Oh, it's a bitter meme. It's a picture of two people, a young man and a young woman in 1914. And the young woman is like, she's not allowed to go to university. And for the young man on the eve of World War I, he's not allowed to live. Did you know this ancient Babylonians did math in base 60 instead of base 10? From this, we derive the modern day usage of 60 seconds in a minute, 60 minutes in an hour, and 360 degrees in a circle. Very interesting. Key and Peele are these two black comedians, incredibly funny, by the way, incredibly funny. I'll give you guys a sketch to watch after. It's an escalation of macho Southern black food ordering. Absolutely hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. Well, it's not up to him. See, the problem is that how many really smart people are still openly Republican and available and willing to work in Washington, right? So. Oh, please link to the Nature article. Sure, I will get you the Nature article. That is a reasonable request. Let me go up. Boom, 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 boom. All right. Ah, yes, here we go. Copy link address. Yeah, here we go. I will put this all over the map. They are hilarious, those two, Key and Peele. All right, there's your Nature article. You should check it out. Yeah, body memory is very real. The idea that we can that all therapy occurs in the head. Therapy and healing is as much physical as it is mental. Thoughts on if the life-changing profit days on Bitcoin are over? I don't believe so. I mean, I've said this for years. This is not investment advice. It's just my personal opinion. Make your own decisions. Do your own research. I said this probably 10 to 12 years ago that I view 750K US of Bitcoin. which is what, 10 times what it is now. That's my target in my head in some reasonable time frame. So that's my target. Again, just my opinion. Just my opinion. And a human foot. All right. Any other last questions, comments, issues, challenges, problems? All right. Yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see if there's any retroactive restoring of accounts under a digital bill of rights. It'd be very interesting. Very interesting. And this is why, to me, exercise, and in particular weights for men, is so therapeutic. It's so therapeutic. Because you're saying, I'm worth being strong and defended. I'm worth being strong and defended. I'm worth having some muscles. I'm worth being strong and defended. I'm worth moving through the world in a relatively powerful way. I'm worth it. I'm not under the control of people 10 times my size who can do whatever the hell they want to me whenever they want. Weights is absolutely therapeutic. Have you seen, there's a new movie called The Heretic, it's called Heretic. And I would say the first two thirds are absolutely good. Hugh Grant. I don't mean to be a body shamer, but holy crap, man. Has he ever used face cream in his life? I mean, those are the kind of cheek wrinkles that fold space-time into another dimension. But it's not a bad movie. It's well written. It's by the guys who did A Quiet Place. And to me, it gets kind of goofy towards the end. But the first two thirds, really good intellectual cat and mouse stuff. And the Monopoly scene is just fantastic. Mind blowing. A really, really great description of ideas and arguments. So I would recommend, I'll do a proper review this week, but I would recommend a movie called Heretic. You should go and check it out. Not necessarily for, it's not for kids. I don't know this 14A thing. Not for kids, not for teens, in my view. But all right, let's see here. Anything else? All right. All of Kamala's supporters needed to be paid huge fees, but Trump's campaigned with him for free. Yeah. Well, it wouldn't hugely surprise me if Biden ceding to Kamala was just vengeance. It's just vengeance. Why do preachers always say we are living in the end of days? I love my life. I think we're living in blessed times. Yeah. Well, anxiety breeds conformity to authority, right? Fear breeds conformity to authority, which is why the people who want to take over your life want to keep you continually afraid. So I hope that makes some sense. All right. Well, thank everyone. thank everyone for me, if you don't mind. Appreciate your time today. What a great chat and conversation. Lots of love from up here. Don't forget, you can get your call-ins at freedomain.com/call. You can choose public or private. It's totally up to you. freedomain.com/call. Operators are standing by. And you can check that out. freedomain.com/books to check out my books. Really pushing the present at the moment, although the future is also great. You can read them in any order you want, but one is a prequel to the other. And Just Poor, The God of Atheists, Revolutions is available at freedomainnft.com. And Almost, which is my masterpiece of a 3-book series. Incredible work. All right. Thank you. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. I appreciate your time, support, freedomain.com/donate. If you'd like to help out the show by listening later, I would hugely appreciate it. Lots of love, my friends. Bye.